is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
The following interview is with Tuolumne Master Gardener Katie Wheeler about collecting polystyrene, otherwise known as styrofoam. This was taped in 2017, so those dates have been removed from the interview. The collection days and times for January of 2020 is Saturday, January 18th from 9 to 4, and Sunday, January 19th from 10 to 2. The polystyrene will be collected on those dates at Waste Management located on Mitronics Way, just off of Tuolumne Road. Enjoy. Hello, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and we're at the UCCE office in downtown Sonora, right next to Superior Court, and I am talking to Tuolumne Master Gardener Katie Wheeler. Hello, Katie.
Hey, Deb.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you also.
And Katie, you are right now planning for a really popular event, and it's called Save Our Polystyrene.
Yes, we started off with calling it Save Our Styrofoam, SOS, but unfortunately styrofoam happens to be a brand name, and so we had to change to polystyrene and call it the generic name for what it is. But I'm in charge of this project as well as Peggy Andrews. Peggy has been a master gardener for actually longer than myself. I graduated in 2006, and Peggy lives in Groveland. And for many years, since 2011 or 2012, she was collecting polystyrene at the fire station in Groveland. They were very gracious in allowing us to store it there because, as we all know, it takes up a lot of space. But anyway, she and her husband John would truck multiple truckloads and trailer loads of polystyrene into Sonora, and we have worked with Waste Management to accomplish this collection. Waste Management has been very gracious in allowing us space and also the use of the big 40-yard bins that we collect the polystyrene in. They have never charged us. They have been more than willing to go out of their way to help accommodate us in our needs. It's been a great community effort.
Now, when are you planning? When is this first event? And usually you try to do two a year, isn't that right?
Yes. Yeah, we started off with just doing one a year, but the need was so great that Peggy and I took over about 2011, 2012, something like that. And we have done two collections every year, always in January. The purpose of doing one in January is to save people having to store the polystyrene for very long after getting a lot of, you know, gifts at Christmas time packed in polystyrene. So we do that as a community. Well, the whole thing is a community service. But we also have a lot of people in this county that get medications on a regular basis stored in polystyrene. And some of them get it off as often as twice a month. So you can imagine how much individual people collect and the difficulty in storing it for any length of time.
Before I forget, what's the date? And what's the address as far as where they would take their polystyrene?
That has brought polystyrene to us knows exactly where we are. But we are, it's called Mitronics Way. It is the cross street of Waste Management where their normal recycling facility is, and all you do is turn off of Tuolumne Road or Standard Road and just follow the signs. Yeah, I do the hotline, quite honestly, and actually in the middle of this year, we were not going to do a collection because there is another recycling place that opened up on Eagle Ridge near Tuolumne Road, and originally the word from them was that they were going to be collecting polystyrene. However, that didn't happen, and in doing the hotline, I recognized that in June and July, 8 out of 10 calls were about polystyrene. And so rather than trying to wait for them to decide if they were going to do this, because it was still iffy at that point, we went ahead and did a collection in August. And so that fulfilled our 2 collections a year for 2017.
Which is great. Now, I think most everybody realizes why it's so important to keep the polystyrene out of the landfill, but just in case, if somebody doesn't realize, what's the problem?
Well,
what's the issue?
The genesis of this actually started in 2006. Becky Miller Cripps was our coordinator at that point, and in 2006 we had a giant class. Actually, it was taught in 2 times. We ended up with like 75 graduates, and we needed more activities. So Becky came up with 3 different ideas. I have no idea what the other 2 ideas were, but styrofoam collection was almost a unanimous decision of our organization. As master gardeners, it may not sound like something that we need to be involved with. However, as stewards of the planet, we are very much responsible in making sure that everything that is used by us as people and can be recycled is recycled, as opposed to just throwing it in your garbage and putting it in landfill, which takes up ginormous amounts of space, etc. We have collected several thousand pounds of polystyrene over the years, and if you can just pick up a small piece of polystyrene and try to weigh it and see how much material would go into 1,000 pounds, you have some idea of just how much this has made a difference in our waste. And the other thing, this is really a fun project for us. I never have a difficulty in getting volunteers from our organization to help with this. First of all, it's not labor intensive. We're lifting, plastic bags of polystyrene that might weigh a pound. And the other thing is, it's a really happy experience because the community is overwhelmingly appreciative of our efforts. They always thank us. They always want to know when the next collection will be. And this is a free service offered to the county.
It's been kind of interesting because without it, there isn't anybody that is willing, at least at this point, to come and get the polystyrene and take it to a place that would recycle it. In the past, you started off with...
We started off with Timbron Industries, which was located down in the Stockton area. And at this point, we are working with Dart Manufacturing. The cool thing about Dart is that they will come up with an empty truck and take all of the polystyrene back to their plant in one load. Before, we used to have to bale it, and actually we had master gardeners that would transport it down to the valley to get it to Timbron. So the change to Dart, and actually Timbron, I believe, went out of business, but Dart recycles it themselves. They are located in Lodi, and anyone can literally bring polystyrene to them 7 days a week. They have an outside facility where they just have open bins, and you can just drop it off yourself.
I think they're right on Highway 12, aren't they?
It's 1400 Victor Road in Lodi, okay. Or Highway 12. And if you have, you know, like a ginormous amount of material that you're tired of taking up space in your garage or wherever, and you happen to be driving down to the valley, that's a great way to get rid of it yourself.
Which is great. And they actually, I believe we went to their plant as a field trip to find out how they do this process. And it was really fascinating. There's a lot of effort on their part to actually take it over to their processing plant, which I believe is in Southern California. And then it's, like you said,
it's melted down. And that, what they do that with the colored polystyrene that you get with vegetables and meat. We started taking that many years ago, and it just needs to be clean. That should be obvious, but you'd be surprised. Anyway, it's cleaned and separated from the bulk packing polystyrene, and what they do is they amass such a quantity, they have a grinding machine that grinds up the material, compresses it, and packs it so they can load a trailer and have enough weight on it to transport it to Southern California. And it's melted down at that plant and then extruded into things like banisters, railings, picture frames, molding, all kinds of different uses.
It's amazing how many products are made out of polystyrene. And then, of course, all the cups and plates and things like that that we use. So
the biggest thing that I got out of that tour, Debbie, was the fact that I think everybody has a bad feeling about polystyrene. It's like, oh my gosh, if we could just use something else, like cardboard, like, you know, corrugated paper, you know, something like that. But they really convinced me that polystyrene is really even more recyclable if people will take the time, and weighs less and takes up far less space in packaging and stuff, and actually is more practical, even though it's kind of counterintuitive that that would be the case. But this is the best way for people, you know, for manufacturers to be able to ship things to us.
Now, kind of looking at some of your figures, that as far as collecting, it is, when you collect in January, that is the biggest collection time versus other times of the year, the second time?
Well, the second time has usually been in conjunction with the solid waste Tuolumne County effort to get hazardous waste out of the environment. And they had been doing it in June, and in 2014 they changed to May. And so we normally do collections in January again to get all the Christmas packaging, and then we pair with them. And so that's going to be probably sometime around the middle of May that they will be doing that, and we will again be, you know, pairing with them at that second collection date.
Probably one of the important things to remember is if we don't have a place to collect styrofoam for other people. So just remembering when these collection dates are is pretty important.
Well, unfortunately, I am willing to be a stopgap a little bit in that process. I happen to have a greenhouse that is totally empty at this time of the year, and I have been known to allow people to bring polystyrene to me if they're in a dire situation, or they're going to be out of town during this weekend, or they just are overwhelmed. So, and I don't really want to make that real public, it's under special circumstances that I will do that.
Which is really wonderful. And we can't give out your personal phone number or your address, but what they could do is call the hotline and leave a message for you, Katie. And that phone number for the hotline is area code 209-533-5912. And we're just about out of time. Is there anything else that you feel is important for people to realize or just remember these dates for January? And if they have questions, they can always call the hotline and leave a message, because I know that you man the hotline, and in addition to one of our other long-time master gardeners, Marion Chambers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we handle all the calls. So, yeah, if you have any questions or concerns in regarding this event, don't hesitate to call.
Thank you for everything you do, Katie. This is so important, and thank you for being on the show today.
Cool. Thank you, Debbie.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I'm back at the Amador office. So fortunate to talk with Scott Onetto. Hello, Scott.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to see you. And we're going to talk about pruning. It's in February, and
it is,
and that's about when we always thought about pruning
exactly.
fruit trees.
If you look back at our Farmer's Almanac, it seems right. like that was
that's,
what you were supposed to do in February.
That's
huh?
what we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
But things have really changed through the years regarding pruning. And I have to admit, I'll just relay some of my personal experience. When I started with the Master Gardener program as a coordinator, and that was back in 2011, and I have to thank you. You sent me to some of them. You sent me to all the Master Gardener training so I would learn how to do it and be more up to date. And I, when it came to fruit production, I was so shocked to find out there was such a thing as summer pruning.
Yeah, yeah, summer pruning.
World,
it wasn't a word probably 30 years ago,
no,
right? 20
no,
years ago when
no,
we learned
no.
about pruning.
I mean, when I went and took my, you know, ornamental horticulture classes or any of the landscape classes, everything that I was taught, it was wintertime only. That is the only time
yeah.
you
dormant
pruned.
Dormant prune, yeah.
Dormant pruning. Yeah. But now things have really changed, and there are some fruit trees that you just really have to wait and prune them in the summertime. Mm-hmm. One of them is apricots.
Yeah.
And the other one is cherries. Mm-hmm. So you just, and then now they're even kind of changing where many of the fruit trees, it's probably best if you can wait until summer.
Exactly.
I mean, sometimes you can't, but maybe you can wait,
yeah.
which is, you know, really nice. But kind of thinking back through, you know, just having fruit trees in our life, you know, through the years, you know, we've existed with fruit trees for years and years and years, for centuries and centuries. And I don't think they pruned or even thought about pruning trees back then. Just kind of going to the basic question, why do we even have to prune them?
Yeah, why prune?
Why don't we just yeah. leave them alone?
And we could. Yeah. Kind of, I guess, similar to so many things, right? Why do we mow the lawn and all
oh,
of
that's
those
true.
Things? Yeah,
that's
I think, you know, I think we're, you know, I think probably the word that would come to mind would be convenience and
yes.
probably aesthetics, right? So,
oh, that's true.
And I guess the other probably big word that I would throw in there would be production,
oh,
right? So
right.
we do it for probably those three main reasons. You know, first, we prune because we want to, you know, train the tree for structure and form. We want to keep the tree at a manageable height, right? So, you know, if we don't train or prune our tree, we can easily have a tree that's 15, 20, 30 feet tall. And
oh,
there's nothing
yes.
wrong with that, but
right.
you know, when it comes to picking fruit off of a tree that's a tree that's 20 foot tall, that often entails a ladder or
oh, I know.
Yeah, and who
a
wants to
ladder.
Do that? Yes. an actual orchard ladder.
Yes.
And if you've
yes.
ever been on a three-legged ladder,
it's scary.
It's a little scary when you get towards the top.
I don't want to do it.
I don't either. Yeah, so thank goodness for semi-dwarf trees and dwarf
yes.
trees. So I think convenience is a big thing. Production is also a really big thing. You know, we prune because you know, often sunlight initiates flower production, right? The formation of flowers.
That's true.
And so if we prune trees properly so that they can maximize the amount of sunlight that actually hits the developing buds that will ultimately flower and then form fruits. That also, of course, right. Helps because we can get more fruit off of those trees. And so that's probably number two. And then I guess aesthetics, you know, we prune trees to, you know, get rid of all of those leggy limbs and, you know, try to keep the tree looking. You know, often these are sometimes, you know, key elements in our landscape, in our backyard or front yard. And we want them to look really good. And so, you know, pruning them is often done just so they look good.
You know, if you've ever, I mean, sometimes I've walked into a house that was maybe built in the 30s, 40s, mm-hmm. or 50s, and every tree has either been a nut tree or a fruit tree.
Interesting.
Because back in that era, that's what you did. I mean, if you were going to plant a tree,
yeah, you planted something you could eat.
Right. Yeah. And canning, of course, mm-hmm. was a bigger deal, and people were trying to do everything they could to provide for their families.
That's so true.
But they're beautiful trees.
Yeah, I mean, the flowers are spectacular.
Yeah,
and often those were trees that were, you know, not on any, I guess you could say, developed root stock. They were on their own root, and these were often standard trees that, you know, often got to 30, 40 feet tall.
Oh, that's true.
Right? Yeah.
That's true.
So it's really come a long way in the last, you know, 20, 30 years in terms of, you know, now we often, when we, you know, go to purchase a new tree, they might be on a semi-dwarf or dwarf rootstock, which basically limits the height of the tree,
and
may often provide some other benefits in terms of disease resistance, pathogen resistance in the soil. So
with some of the newer varieties,
they're
a little bit easier, which is wonderful. Now, what is the main reason why we've gone to summer pruning?
Yeah, so it's been kind of fascinating to see this sort of trend, and you know, I'm not sure exactly the exact history of how and when it happened, but it seems like it's been, you know, fairly recently in the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen sort of this increase in summer pruning, basically waiting till after that season's fruits are harvested, and then going through and doing some pruning, basically, right? To
mm-hmm.
to get rid of, you know, dead, dying, diseased limbs, but also opening the tree up and just, you know, kind of bringing that tree down to a manageable height. And so it has been a fairly recent trend, but it's been a trend that we've actually been seeing tons of benefits, right?
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's so much nicer being out pruning trees in September when it's, you know, still warm and it's daylight and it's not raining.
Right.
Who wants to be out? Gosh, I mean, it's storming out right now,
I know,
right? Who
wants to be out there pruning? I know. I don't want to be outside right now.
No, when it's 25, 30 degrees out.
Not at all.
So, you know, in terms of just, you know, the, you know, being more, I guess, suitable in
yes.
terms of the environment, that's, of course, a plus. But some of the other benefits that we've seen with summer pruning has been less disease, as we talked about, right? Especially things that are so susceptible to some of the bacterial diseases like apricots and cherries. That's one of the reasons why we try not to do winter pruning with them, because they're spread typically by splashing water.
And so you open up a wound, then those
trees are susceptible to any bacterium that can get in there through splashing water. So, you know, avoiding any of those fresh cuts when there's moisture around is really critical. So summer pruning has helped tremendously with that.
So are the diseases more present in the wintertime than they are in the summertime? Or is it basically because of the splashing water?
That's really, yeah, they're around all the time, but it's really that splashing water.
It's the splashing water.
Yeah,
okay.
So we often avoid overhead irrigation in those trees as well if we can, just because, you know, that's another way to, you know, spread that pathogen, those bacteria by sprinklers hitting the trunks and branches. Just trying to avoid any type of splashing water is really critical. But so that's why this, you know, late summer pruning, it's dry. You know, the chance of rain is low. those wounds will heal often very quickly because it is dry out, so they heal very quickly. So that's been a really added benefit. And then the other benefit that I've seen with summer pruning has also been the decrease in water sprouts, I guess you could call them, or these. Often, you know, when we prune in the winter, we see these trees in the springtime when they flush out with growth. You just get a tremendous amount of sprouts, right? Of
long limbs,
spindly limbs, yes.
Coming from the trunk.
Yes.
They can take over.
Yeah, they can take over, and they tend to be unfruitful, right?
They
tend to be mostly, you know, they make lots and lots of leaves and fill up the canopy, but they just don't produce a whole lot of fruit.
Right.
And that's just one of the, you know, that's something we see. It's not, you know, specific to fruit trees. We see that with any type of plant that we prune mm-hmm. during the winter. They often, you know, respond that way in the spring. And what we've seen with summer pruning is just the opposite, right? It reduces mm-hmm. that, the plant's response to, you know, send up all of those, you know, those spindly shoots.
And so why make more work for yourself?
Exactly, right? Because then you just have to go in and do more thinning
right,
and pruning.
And more pruning. Yeah. Absolutely. No, that is really great advice. Now, what about if by some chance you move into a piece of property and you have an old fruit tree, one that's been around, should you just give up?
Yeah.
I mean, one that's out of control.
Yes, yeah, oh my gosh, yeah. We've all seen those, right?
Right. Oh, gosh. Is there anything you can do?
Yeah, well, I think that's probably when you think about winter pruning.
Okay.
You know, that's, you know, some of the advantages of winter pruning is, you know, being able to take off a considerable amount of the canopy if you needed to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you have an overgrown tree and you want to try to bring it down to a more manageable level, that's typically, you know, the winter pruning is a really great tool to do that.
Okay.
You know, and often we'll recommend that you can take up to, you know, about a third of the canopy at any given time. And that's kind of a guiding rule. I've seen people take off more than that, but especially for those really large overgrown trees. But depending on the health of the tree, the size, you know, you may want to take off, you know, up to about a third and maybe do that, you know, bring that tree down to a more manageable size over the period of maybe 2 or 3 years. Don't try to do it all in one sitting. Yeah, you know, it's not a race. It's, you know, you want to do it and allow the tree to be able to respond to, you know, that, you know, it's a pretty severe.
It is.
Yeah.
That would be a severe.
Yeah. And right. So I've seen, you know, really large apple trees, olive trees, you know, that are 30, 40 feet tall that, you know, people have successfully brought down to 8, 10, 12 feet.
Is that right?
Yeah, but you just want to do it over, like I said, over a period of 2 to 3 years. Just, you know, slowly bring that height down and, you know, try to get some new fruiting branches to develop that are at a lower height.
Okay.
And we've got, you know, we've got some great handouts.
We do.
Yeah. So
we
if people, you know, find themselves in that, you know, situation,
mm-hmm.
we've got some really good publications with pictures showing how to successfully
right,
do that.
Right. Now, also on the Central Sierra website, we have a listing of all the classes. So if anybody wanted to learn how to train their trees or anything about gardening, that's a great resource. We have the Master Gardeners there. We have a listing of all the free public classes,
yeah.
And they're all free.
And if summer pruning kind of scares you, you know, the Master Gardeners hold classes typically in that time of the year,
yes.
on how to summer prune, and they're just super helpful for being able for just get a hands-on experience of how to go about doing it.
Right. No, and that website, just check it out. It's Central Sierra Cooperative Extension. I typically Google it. It comes right up, and then I find all kinds of resources. And believe it or not, we're also going to put this radio show on the Central Sierra website, but it will be under Tuolumne Master Gardeners. So it's Master Gardeners, then Tuolumne County, and we're starting to archive our radio shows there. So Scott, I really wanted to thank you, but we ran out of time.
Oh.
We'll have to have you come back again.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.